And you are tuned in to CITR 101.9 FM. My name is Brian McDonald, and welcome again to Scald's Hall. And tonight we have a couple of things lined up for us, something that took me a little while to track down, but I finally found it. It is a Lights Out episode named Rocket from Manhattan. I wanted to play that. I finally found it. And we're going to also take a listen at the bottom half of the hour to the X-1 story, Star Bright. So those are coming up right now. So sit back, relax, and begin to enjoy this lovely long June evening with a little bit of spoken word entertainment.
Lights out for the devil and Mr. O. Supernatural and the supernormal, dramatizing the fantasies and the mysteries of the unknown. We tell you this frankly so that if you wish to avoid the excitement and tension of these imaginative plays, we urge you calmly but sincerely to turn off your radio now.
Jobler. In a few moments, you're going to hear what might be called a happening. I wrote it almost a lifetime ago, and yet I know you'll agree with me after you hear it. It's as if I wrote it this very morning. Part of what I wrote over 25 long years ago has already become fact. The rest of the chilling prophecy, well, the happening happens after a word from your station.
See the leaf? Right here in my hand.
Oh, yes.
Isn't that a new leaf?
Yes, it is a new leaf.
Here, I'm going to turn over a new leaf. Get it? Leaf? New?
What does that mean, to turn over a new leaf?
Well, in serious,
mm-hmm.
means that you're going to have a little change.
From what to what?
From bad to good.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, suppose somebody was crying.
They could switch from tears to a smile.
Suppose they were lonely.
They could go from loneliness to having somebody to play with.
Well, suppose somebody wasn't loved. Could they turn over a new leaf?
They could go from not loving somebody to loving somebody.
How do they do that?
All they have to do is try to love somebody.
Just try?
Yeah. It's easy to love people when you try.
Love makes all things new again. Hey, what was that?
Another sound of love from the Franciscans.
And now, if you haven't already done so, turn off your lights now and listen to Rocket from Manhattan.
Hi, Doc. How about joining us?
Yes, Doctor. Don't you think it's about time we had a little celebration?
There's a great deal of work to be done.
Work's over, Doctor. 24 hours more and we're back.
Yes, Doctor. We'll be back. We've done it. Complete.
In 24 hours.
If you're worried about our landing, I'm not. You worried, Reynolds?
No, sir. Everything's in perfect order.
Sure, Doc. There's going to be a round trip. Anyway, there's 24 hours before we have to worry about that. Doctor.
I'll grant you that our adventure's gone well.
Doc, pardon the expression, but you're a gloomy Joe.
I am a realist.
But, Doctor, the possibilities of anything's going wrong are remote. Surely we're entitled to relax a little and relish the fact of what we've done.
Yeah, we've done it, Doc. Even if we never get back, we've done it. We've been to the moon, and it'll always be there on the books.
But we are out of radio contact with the Earth.
Yes, sir. But we are on course. Doc, what is wrong?
Wrong? What should be wrong?
Well, the kid's right, Doc. Ever since we made the circle and started back all these days, you've been acting as if we didn't make it. We've gone 243,000 miles, and we're 3/4 of the way back, and we're in, Doc. We're in. So what's the matter with you?
How old were you, Major, when the Second World War ended?
Oh, about 5. What's that got to do with
it? And you, Reynolds, you weren't even born.
No, sir.
I was 21 on that day in New Mexico when they set off the first chain reaction. 21.
Doc, you mean to say you were in at the beginning of it?
Of course he was. Dr. Chamberlain was one of the original research men in the atomic bomb project back in 45. The only one of them alive today.
Well, what do you know? So that's why you wanted to make this trip, Doc. I mean, you...
Yes, Major. You wanted it as a substitution for what you missed as a boy. The excitement and glory of war.
Oh, now, Doc...
It's true, and Reynolds here is young and idealistic. And the scientific wonder of it was what he wanted. And I was there at the birth of an era. Now atomic power is driving me into space, back to the Earth where it all began. And I'm thinking...
Yeah, Doc?
It's not pertinent to any of this. We've no time to discuss our emotions. There's work to be done.
Airspeed 23486.
Airspeed 23486.
Any radio contact, Reynolds?
No, sir.
How about that, Doc?
Unfortunate, but not very vital. We're definitely on course.
How much longer will it be, Doc?
10 hours. Why do you laugh, Major?
I was just thinking about how many millions of telescopes are turned in our direction.
Yes?
What you said a few hours ago. I mean, about my wanting the excitement and adventure. That's true, you know. I'm 60 years old, and I guess I just lived for this chance. The Army hadn't okayed my going. Well, here I am. Once we land, I'll admit frankly, I'm going to cash in on every bit of it and have myself a time. You know something? I get the feeling kind of depressed when I think it'll soon be over. Well, there's no reason for depression, is there?
I couldn't answer that. You've been wondering, undoubtedly, why ever since we left the moon, I've been acting strangely.
That's right.
I've never believed in predestination, and yet there's been sort of a motivation of fate in my life. At 21, I was part of that research team trying to adapt atomic power to military purposes. When that first bomb went off over the New Mexico desert, a newspaper man repeated the words, "What hath God wrought?" And no one quite knew. I've been waiting 55 years for the answer. I think I found it a few hours ago on the moon. And it's an answer full of horror.
Oh, Reynolds?
Yes, sir.
Close the oxygen valve. That's why you're yawning.
Oh, the Major's sure sleeping.
Yes.
It's only a few more hours, isn't it?
Yes.
Before, you spoke of finding an answer on the moon. And then you didn't say any more. Well, I've been thinking about it. I was wondering if it was something that the Major couldn't understand. And that's why you didn't speak of it further.
And now you want to know.
Yes, sir. I haven't lived anywhere as long as you two have, but my life has been built around atomic power. Now, all of a sudden, the way you spoke before, as if all our research has been criminal. Do you mean that?
Collision. Radar.
Get at it.
What's the matter? What's the matter?
Object approaching.
Where?
15 degrees west. There it is.
Meteorite. It's a meteorite.
That was the closest.
It was indeed.
Be sardonic indeed to collide with a meteorite at this point in our journey.
I use a stronger word than sardonic, Doctor.
Yeah, like fatal.
It's all clear.
Well, I better get back to...
No, Reynolds. Reynolds, you asked me a question before, and I want to answer it. You too, Major Russell. I want you to hear this.
Sure.
Reynolds overheard what I said to you. That I'd found the answer to a very old question on the moon. He said that he felt that somehow I thought all of the research on atomic power had been criminal. No, young man, I don't believe that. Not at all. Criminal to know more about a way of nature? No. The answer I found was something else. I haven't even an answer, perhaps only a theory. When we came within 100 miles of the moon and then began to de-accelerate, to turn back, what did we see through the observation ports?
Well, Doc, we saw...
No, please, let me tell you what I saw. The craters of the moon. Great, gigantic craters, and as we came closer and closer, the look of them was so familiar. Not because I had seen them through telescopes and in photographs, but for some reason that I couldn't quite understand. Craters of the moon, and suddenly, at the very moment when we'd come as close as we dared and our ship swung in an orbit to return, suddenly I knew. It was a memory of another crater I had seen 55 years before in New Mexico from an observation plane high over the ground a few hours after the first atomic bomb had lit the sky with a new sun. Yes. The crater in the crust of the Earth that bomb had left was the same as the craters of the moon. Do you understand? The crater our bomb had left on the Earth was the same as the craters on the moon.
So what? I don't get it.
Yes, Doctor. What are you getting at? Well, the crater in that desert was a thousandth of the size of the ones you're talking about.
I suddenly began to think. Was it not possible that the moon had gone through the same evolutionary processes as our Earth before our Earth? Yes. Wasn't it possible that men had come into being on the moon, developed their own civilization, had known scientific progress, even as we have, but long before we Earthmen had known it?
Say, Doc!
You do understand. These men of the moon had discovered the secret of atomic power long before we did, and then had used it to blast and to tear each other. Yes. And the craters on the moon, that terrible devastation, was the record of the destruction of their civilization. A final war which had burned up the very atmosphere and left the moon a dead planet circling endlessly through an airless sky.
All right, Doctor. Presuming your theory is correct that the moon men had started through a war, a chain atomic reaction that they couldn't stop, well, what of it? It indicates that they were fools.
Yeah, that's it. Fools.
Are we any wiser?
We leave our The Devil and Mr. O's story of Rocket from Manhattan for a short pause.
When you've got a family to feed, there are ways to cut high food costs, and we'd like to tell you an economical, tasty way to serve top-quality meat dishes. Today's answer is high-protein ham, H-A-M, Krakus and Atalanta imported Polish ham. When you buy Krakus or Atalanta Polish ham, there's no waste, no gristle or bone to throw away, and no water added. It's all lean, flavorful ham, down to the last tasty bit. You can even use the small amount of jellied broth to make soups more nourishing, or to create delicious gravies. And warm weather is time for relaxing. Feeding your family can be less work, and entertaining will be more fun if you'll get the Polish ham habit. It's great for all outdoor or indoor dining, for snacks, picnics, and for every good food occasion. And Polish ham may just be the most economical answer to hot or cold meals your family and guests will love. It's the easiest food you can prepare because Polish ham is fully cooked when you buy it. So if you wish, just zip open the tin, slice, serve, and enjoy from end to end.
And now back to our story of Rocket from Manhattan.
Airspeed, 2,482.
You'd better cut it down.
Right, how much?
About 15%.
Right.
You get anything, Reynolds?
No, sir.
Would you come here a moment?
Yes, sir.
Will you help me with this port covering?
Yes, sir.
Easy there.
Right.
Well,
Got to take a look, huh?
Yes, that's it. There she is.
Mama Earth. 6 more hours, eh, Doctor?
Or less.
I'm sure we haven't made a mistake and headed for Venus.
What are you...
That was just a bad joke, Doc. Now, there's no two ways about it. The outline of the continents, we can't make any mistake about that being our home address. I wonder how much they can see of us. What are we, 6,000-7,000 miles out? You know, this reminds me of the time about 25 years ago. The Army sent me up to 1,000 miles to take observation photographs. Well, you remember how the atomic reaction motors were then. We got up about 500 feet.
Major.
What? What?
Look down. Look.
What? Well, I don't see anything.
Look, I tell you. Reynolds, come here.
What's the matter? Something wrong?
Well, the doctor says there's...
Reynolds, look. Do you see? Yes. What is it?
I see it, too. Bright lights going on and off. What's going on down there?
Doctor, are they signaling us? Are they signaling?
It's 6,000 miles. Why? Why should they?
That's right. There's no such plan.
Look at it. It is lights going on and off.
But they're all from one area.
Can you make out where?
North America.
Then they are signals. The candle in the window.
Your own question. At 6,000 miles?
Wait a minute.
Are they explosions?
Explosions? Major Doctor, is that it? Are they explosions?
I don't know.
CQ, CQ, hello, 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 CQ, CQ. Oh, I'm sorry, Doctor, I can't raise anyone.
Doc, come here.
Yes, but...
Look, the closer we get, they are explosions.
3 more hours, we'll know.
I want to know now. Reynolds, what's the matter with you? Why can't you make radio contact?
I'm doing everything I can.
Major.
Doc, what are...
Craters. Look, craters.
Craters? At this altitude, you couldn't possibly...
After each flash, I do see them.
Okay, what does it mean? Well, what are you looking at me like that for? What does it mean?
Dr. Major, something's coming through.
Oh, it's about time.
I can only hear it faintly.
What? What?
Please, let me listen. United States... What?
Reynolds, what is it?
Tell us.
What? Boys, I couldn't quite make out. He said...
Said what?
Tell us.
War. He said war. Blasting the United States off the face of the earth.
Blasting.
It's a joke, isn't it? Isn't it?
What are they sending now? What now?
It began an hour ago. No warning. Projectiles, radio controlled. Point of origin unknown. Oh, it stopped again, the transmission.
That's enough. Doctor, did you hear it was an attack without warning?
The explosions are increasing in frequency.
Reynolds, is there anything more coming through?
No, nothing. Yes. Yes, they started transmission again.
All right, let's have it quick.
It's some station in Midwest. I can't get the call letters.
Who cares?
He says it's hell. Ground shaking. No bombs landed near, but air reconnaissance. It's so garbled I can hardly make out.
Well.
It started an hour ago. Everything burning. Now it's stopped again. There's nothing.
Doctor, in heaven's name, what do you think it's all about? Stop staring out of the window and talk to me.
What are they doing?
What do you mean, what are they doing? They're bombing us, blasting us. It's war, but who? I've got to find out. Reynolds, find out who.
Well, it's no use. There's no transmission.
Doctor, those bombs, where are they coming from? Can't you tell by the trajectory?
At this distance? And what difference does the face of the enemy make? It's happening, that's all.
Smashed them. I always said we should have smashed them. Exterminated them 50 years ago.
Oh, they were so peaceful for so many years and...
The flashes are increasing in frequency.
Reynolds, get on that radio.
I'll try again.
I got to know who. The devils. We had agreements with everyone. The international... Devils, all of them. Call them devils, I don't even know who they are. Reynolds, you got anything?
No, I don't.
Doctor, faster. Let's get down there faster. Let's open it up.
Well, you know better than that. We're entering atmosphere. Increased speed and we'd burn up like a meteorite.
But I'm an army man. All my life I've been trained.
Something's coming through.
What?
The bombs? Nothing? I can hardly make it out.
Keep at it.
Panic? Paratroopers?
Who?
Last message from United States of... It's ended. There is no more.
If we'd only get down there faster.
Only 500 more miles.
Look at it down there. Our Air Force, protective measures, what happened to them?
What happened?
Doctor, you, why don't you say something? We'll just sit there for hours watching. This isn't a scientific experiment going on down there. They're blasting us to pieces. Us. Your atomic bomb, the great secret. Hold it over the world and have peace forever. You said that. Yes, you. I was a kid then. I heard you say it over the radio when they gave you a medal. Hold it over the world and have peace forever. Well, what do you got to say now?
We had a wonderful 55 years.
What?
Everybody had a wonderful time.
Reynolds, what's the matter with him? He's gone.
No. Let him finish.
First, we hung the criminals 55 years ago. And as soon as their bodies stopped swinging, we left the crowd and each went back to his own house and shut the door.
You said the peace would hold forever.
I said it because I thought that when the secret was put away, the people of the world would remember the terror. I said to myself, now, surely now that they've seen the possibility of the disintegration of their Earth, they'll be drawn together once again into the family of men as it must have been in the beginning. I forgot what years could do. I forgot how quickly forgetfulness comes. I forgot that in only a few years, Hiroshima and Nagasaki would be only yesterday's sensations for a nation eager for sensations for today. You keep asking me who is sending those bombs against us. Who? I tell you, we're sending them against ourselves. Yes, because had we made our way of life something more than a confused dream of shiny machines and happy endings, those bombs of hatred and revenge would not be flying at us. I said the peace would hold forever because I thought that out of that war, at last, men had learned that there was no defense against hatred and revenge, but the defense of education for the unity of people. It was a race, gentlemen, against time. And we wasted our last 55 years running backwards on a track of chromium and plastics. And so we've lost forever.
No. We've never lost.
Look, the blasts are increasing in frequency. There's nothing left. Nothing.
We'll start someplace else. We'll build...
Doctor, look. The color of the blast.
Oh, dear God.
What? What?
Doctor, it's nitrogen, isn't it?
Nitrogen, what?
The fools, the everlasting fools, I warned.
The blasts, more and more.
They started something they couldn't end. The color of the blasts, they've set off hydrogen atoms.
I don't know what you...
We used uranium, plutonium, and when the initial blast was over, that was all. But hydrogen, that's part of life. One reaction sets off the other like setting off an endless chain until... Look down there.
Blast, faster and faster.
They're spreading.
The fools. God help the fools. God help the fools.
It happened.
A sheet of flame. Around the earth. Doctor, tell me, what is it? What was it? Tell me.
It burned up all the atmosphere.
Burned up? Reynolds, what does he mean?
The chain reaction burned up all the air.
Moonlight.
Major. Major, the left jet.
It's all right. It's all right. All right. Where are we going? Can we go down there?
There is no air, no life. The moon, the earth, the same.
How much fuel?
There is the gauge.
2-3 hours?
Yes. Yes, I think that's right. Isn't it, Major?
Yeah.
But what do we do?
You ask that question now? The Major no longer asks it. Do you know the answer, Major?
Sure. We'll circle around. Then we'll crash.
No. No, it'll be all right, my boy. My words again. Have peace forever.
This is Mr. O.R. Jobler. The play has ended. Just a play. Something out of my imagination written over a quarter of a century ago. Part of what I imagined then has come to pass. I'm sure you pray with me that the rest of it is a very false prophecy. Let's talk about our next play. There is no prophecy in that one. I was in England. I met a titled old goat who was very weary of his very sweet little wife. And out of that family affair comes next week's play. But first, an interlude for a message.
This is Red Buttons with a suggestion on how you can help Johnny Horizon and his campaign to clean up America for our nation's 200th birthday and help restore the natural beauty of our land. Why not organize cleanup projects for local parks, recreation areas, or the block where you live? The booklet, How to Conduct a Cleanup Campaign, will help you get started. To get this free booklet, write Johnny Horizon Program, Washington, D.C., 20240.
This is Celeste Holm. The formal ceasefire in Vietnam has not ended the suffering. The youngest victims of the war need help from the United Nations Children's Fund. UNICEF has been helping in Vietnam, Laos, and Cambodia for 20 years, helping them with food, medical care, housing, and education. They must now work harder than ever to rebuild young lives. In Indochina, as in Bangladesh, UNICEF will be there long after the fighting ends. They need your help. Please send your check to UNICEF, New York, 10017.
This is Mr. O again. To that listener who wrote me from Boston, yes, I recently wrote a novel, and if you shake your bookseller hard enough, you might be able to get a copy of it. Its title is House on Fire, and Bartholomew House published it. Now about next week's play. It's titled Hollywood Visitor, and for you devotees of horror, yes, that's what it is. Next time.
Trouble finding affordable fresh baked goods and coffee? Come down to Agora Cafe located in the McMillan building at UBC. There's also space available to study.
We don't need to tell you that Vancouver has a housing problem.
Mass evictions.
Mass rent evictions.
Unfair rent increases.
What happened to rent control and protection from unfair eviction?
If these or other housing matters concern you, you may be interested in joining the Vancouver Tenants Union. For more information, visit tenantsunion.ca.
In just a moment, X minus one. But first, some of the funniest situations you've ever witnessed occur every Wednesday night when the devilish imagination of MC Jack Bailey gets to work on NBC's Truth or Consequences. You won't believe it until you hear it, so listen in tomorrow. Then another laugh session is in store later on with the wise and witty Groucho Marx as he and contestants play You Bet Your Life. While the melodic note in your Wednesday evening schedule is music and fun on airtime with Giselle McKenzie.
Countdown for blast off. X minus 5, 4, 3, 2, X minus 1, fire. From the far horizons of the unknown come transcribed tales of new dimensions in time and space. These are stories of the future, adventures in which you'll live in a million could-be years on a thousand maybe worlds. The National Broadcasting Company, in cooperation with Galaxy Science Fiction Magazine, presents
X minus one.
Tonight, the Mark Clifton story, Star Bright.
Well, it's finally happened. I've known it would for a long time now. That's why I'm writing this, in the hopes that you'll understand and not think me mad. Whatever the outcome, I hope you will not judge me too harshly for what I've done or failed to do.
Mr. Holmes... Mr. Holmes.
Come in. Oh, hello, Chief.
I just wanted to let you know, sir, that we're doing everything we can to find the children.
Yes, I'm sure you are.
We've got 300 men out combing the woods for them. The Army base has volunteered another 100 men, and we've sent an all-points bulletin to every police unit in the country.
Fine, fine.
I just wanted to check and make certain our description is accurate. Your little girl, Star, was wearing a blue dress and white sandals. Is that right?
That's right.
And she is how old?
Six years old.
And the little howl boy, how old was he?
Seven, I believe, yes, seven.
Uh-huh, yeah. Thank you. Well, I'll be in touch with you.
Well, that's very good of you, Chief. Oh, by the way,
yes.
Mr. and Mrs. Howell, how are they taking it?
Well, they're pretty upset, naturally. Mr. Howell, he's out with the men searching.
Yes, yes, I know.
And Mrs. Howell's in the car outside.
Ruth is outside? Why didn't she come in?
Well, she said she'd rather not.
Oh, I see.
Do you, Pete?
Well, Mrs. Howell, I thought...
I decided to come in. I'm not going to sit on my feelings any longer.
Now, Mrs. Howell...
No, I have to say this. Pete, Bill and I have been your neighbors for almost a year now. Our children have been almost inseparable.
I know that.
Then how can you just sit here writing letters when they may be lost somewhere or in trouble? Why aren't you out with Bill and the rest of them searching?
I can't. Ruth, I know how you feel. Please try to understand. I intend to help find Bobby and Star, but I must do this first.
Why? What's so important about
Ruth,
it?
Ruth, I'm sorry.
Sorry? Then why don't you act like a man? You're inhuman.
Please.
I don't ever want to see you or speak to you again. Ever.
Perhaps you won't.
What was that, Mr. Holmes?
Nothing. Chief, if you don't mind, I'd like to be alone for a moment.
Okay, Mr. Holmes. I'll keep in touch.
How can I tell them? How can I make them understand? I write this to you because they must be made to understand somehow, but I have to begin at the beginning. I think I first noticed it one evening when Star was 3 years old. I was in my reading chair going over some work. Star was sitting on the floor in the circle of light with her blunt-nosed scissors and scraps of paper. Her long silence made me glance down.
And then we glue this together, put a line here and there.
Star.
Like that.
Star.
What is it, Daddy?
Can I see what you've made?
Uh-huh.
Well, well. It's quite a coincidence.
What?
You know what they call a piece of paper joined together with a half twist like this?
Nope.
It's called a Mobius strip.
You mean somebody already made one?
A man named Mobius, mathematician, long time ago.
Did he know you can put a line on it like that so it has one side all joined?
Yes, yes, he did. Someday I'll tell you what it means.
Now do it.
What?
Tell me about a Mobius strip.
Very complicated.
Then read me about it.
Oh, you wouldn't understand, honey.
Read me anyway.
Okay, young lady. But I warn you, it'll be like one of those nonsense rhymes. At least, I hope it will. At 3 years, a child shouldn't have enough functioning intelligence to put together a Mobius strip. I had known for some time now that Star was an exceptionally bright child. Just how bright, I had no idea. Not until I began to read to her from an advanced physics book, The Theory of the Mobius Strip. To the power of infinity. Now then, are you sufficiently mixed up, young lady?
Daddy, you know what?
What?
You read too slow. You say a word, then I think a long time, then you say another word.
Oh, I see. Just what would you have me do about it?
Well, teach me to read. Then I can think as quick as I want.
The word is quickly. It's an adverb.
Oh, Daddy, really? You pick on such unimportant things. I want to learn to read.
Okay. When would you like to begin?
Right now. Tonight.
Before she went to bed that evening, my daughter was able to read. In the months that followed, a great deal happened. Some of our friends, like Jim Petrie, have dropped in and been amused to see her on the floor, rapidly turning the pages of an encyclopedia as big as she is. Sit down, Jim.
Oh, thanks.
Star, aren't you going to say hello to Uncle Jim?
Hello. Huh?
I see she's taken to looking at the pictures in the encyclopedia, huh? Mm.
Oh, yeah, yes. Come on in the library, Jim. I'd like to talk to you privately.
Yeah, sure thing.
Bring your drink, huh?
Okay.
I'll shut the door here.
Why all the secrecy?
Sit down. Now, Jim, we've been friends, you and I, ever since engineering school.
So?
Neither of us have ever mentioned it, but one of the reasons we were drawn together is because both of us have IQ somewhere up in the genius ratings.
Oh, I think it was more than that.
Well, that played a part. It isn't easy to be exceptional in a world which regards mediocrity as the only behavior above suspicion.
Well, we all have to live with our afflictions. Yours and mine is a quick mind in a dull environment.
What would you do, Jim, if you were a parent as I am, whose wife had died as Eleanor did, and you discovered that your only child was, well, afflicted with a fantastically brilliant mind?
Star? Oh, come on, Pete. Any little girl who's content just to look at the pictures in the encyclopedia.
Jim.
I mean, after
Jim,
all. What?
She wasn't looking at the pictures.
Huh?
She was reading the pages.
What? But she was turning them as fast as humanly possible.
She was reading them.
What?
I know. I've tested her. She not only remembers everything, she understands the concepts. She even gets impatient with
them. Well, have you measured her?
Well, I've given her IQ tests, aptitude tests, reaction tables, all the paraphernalia for measuring something we know nothing about.
And?
Tests don't work.
How do you mean?
Well, either the tables are screwy or Star's beyond all measurement.
Pete, are you sure you're not projecting this? I mean, isn't it possible that a few accidental...
Yes, honey.
I got lonely.
Okay, come on in.
Uncle Jim, would you read me a story?
Why don't you read your own story?
Because I'm only three, And 3-year-olds can't read.
And so she had found the answer to her affliction by herself, conformity. She had already learned to conceal her intelligence. So many of us break our hearts before we learn that. When Star was 4 years old, according to state law, her mind had developed enough so she could attend nursery school.
Hi, Daddy.
Hi, honey. Did you, like nursery school?
Oh, yes, it was fun.
What'd you learn today?
Not much. I tried to cut out paper dolls, but the scissors kept slipping.
Now, look, Star, don't overdo it. That's as bad as being too quick. The idea is that everybody has to be just about standard average. That's the only thing people will tolerate. It's expected that a little girl of 4 should know how to cut out paper dolls properly.
Oh, I guess that's the hard part, isn't it, Daddy? To know how much you ought to know.
Yeah. That's the part I always found hard when I was young.
It's really all right. I let one little girl show me how to cut them out, so now she likes me. She just took charge of me and told the other kids they should like me, too. So they did, because she's the leader, even if she is one of the stupids.
What?
The stupids. That's the trouble with you, Daddy. You don't grasp things right away. That's because you're only a tween.
A tween? I assume that means an in-between?
That's right. You're in between a stupid and a bright.
And you're a bright?
Yes. I made those names up when I was very little.
How little?
Oh, about 6 months old.
The thoughts began to whirl around in my head after that one. A small fear kept growing inside me. How profound was this little imp that was staring up at me? How much did she understand already? Even as the thought formed, I learned the final horrifying fact about my little girl.
It's all right, Daddy. Don't be afraid of me.
Well, how did you know that I was thinking anything like that?
Well, I just figured it out.
Star.
Yes, Daddy?
Now, I want you to answer me honestly when I ask you this next question, will you?
Yes.
Star. Can you read people's minds? Are you a telepath? Well?
Yes, Daddy.
I thought so. You read my mind just now, didn't you?
Yes.
Now, I'd like to know something else.
All right.
Can you teach me to do it?
You're already learning it, Daddy. The trouble is you're so slow you didn't even know you were learning.
Oh, I see.
Daddy?
Yeah?
You know what I wish?
What do you wish?
Well, nothing.
All the same, I knew exactly what she was wishing. She was wishing for a companion whose mind would match her own. You see, I was becoming telepathic. Just a minute. Well, hello.
Is your little girl home?
Yeah, she's upstairs. Who are you?
I'm Robert.
Robert who?
Robert Howell. My mother and father moved next door yesterday.
Oh, well, come in, Robert.
I'd like to play with your little girl.
How'd you know I had a little girl?
Oh, I just know.
I see. And how old are you?
I'm 6.
Well, I'll ask Star to come downstairs. I'm sure she'll be glad to see you.
Yes, she will.
Tell me, Robert, are you a tween or a bride?
Oh, I'm a... What did you say, Mr. Holmes?
Nothing. I didn't have to say it. I could read his thought. He was a bright, and it was no accident that he and his parents had moved next door. Somehow, Star had managed to make contact with him, and they had arranged the whole thing. A father is prepared to lose his daughter eventually, but not so soon, not so terribly soon. Coming. Oh, hello, Ruth. Something wrong?
Well, I was just looking for Bobby. I thought he was over here playing with Star.
Well, I thought they were over at your place.
I don't understand it.
I've noticed that they've been disappearing for a couple of hours almost every afternoon.
Well, I suppose they'll turn up again. They know better than to cross the street by themselves. They're too little for that. If they come here first, tell them to come over and have some milk and cookies.
Yeah, I'll do that.
Oh, by the way, this must belong to your star.
Oh, what's that?
Oh, some sort of coin or medal or something. I found it out in the backyard after Star and Bobby were playing. It looks brand new.
Let's have a look.
Oh, is something wrong?
Did you say you found this in your backyard?
Yes. What is it?
I don't know.
Well, I've got to get back. Bill will be getting home for dinner soon, so see you later.
Yes.
Hello?
Jim?
Yes.
Do you have a portable spectrophotometer?
Well, sure. We've got a dozen here at the lab.
Pack one up and get over here right away, will you?
Well, Pete, I don't quit till 5.
Look, do as I say, huh? It's important.
Well, okay.
Uh-huh. Well?
Let me check the amount of radioactivity again.
You've checked it 4 times.
That's about it.
Okay. What's your opinion of this coin?
Well, first of all, let me say this. It's the real McCoy.
And?
Also, it doesn't exist.
Makes sense.
Look, Pete, that coin is pre-Egyptian. It's hand-cast. It's made out of one of the oldest bronze alloys, one that was lost 4,000 years ago.
So it's 4,000 years old.
It is and it isn't.
What do you mean?
Listen, Pete, old coins show wear. The edges get rounded with handling. The surface oxidizes. The molecular structure changes, crystallizes. Pete, this coin is authentic, and yet it's brand new. It might have been struck off yesterday.
You realize, of course, that that's impossible.
Where'd you get it, Pete?
I don't know. I think the kid's got it.
Star?
Yes.
How?
I don't know. I'm almost afraid to think.
Why not ask her?
She isn't around. She and Robert are off playing somewhere.
Well, do you know where?
No, I... Oh, Jim, it's just too fantastic. It isn't possible.
I haven't said a word.
I know what you're thinking.
As a matter of fact, I was thinking something fantastic. How did you guess?
I just guessed. Jim, let's find those kids right now.
Okay.
Star! Robert! Let's try the playroom. Star! Robert! Not in here. Let's try back here.
I hear something.
What?
Pete, it's coming from the room we were just in.
That's impossible. There's no place they could have hidden.
I'm going to open that door.
Peek-a-boo, Uncle Jim!
There they were, in the middle of the playroom, holding hands, a little shamefaced, a little defiant. Star, Robert, where have you been? Now, I know you weren't in this room a few seconds ago, and there are no windows you could get through. Well?
It's nothing, Daddy. We just went a little ways.
That is not answering me. Where did you go?
You see, Star, we've found this coin.
Come on.
I shouldn't have to tell. You're both just tweens.
Star, I'm still your daddy. Even brights have feelings about their parents. Now.
I tried to ESP you, Daddy.
Does she mean extrasensory perception?
Yes.
You just don't ESP good, Daddy. Robert does it very nicely. He can always find me when I hide.
That's because you don't have much imagination.
I do, too.
Yeah, but you always have to look at a book to ESP what's in it so you leave an ESP smudge. I just look at where you left the smudge, and I go to that place... In that time, there you are.
Oh, but that's cheating.
It isn't. You just haven't got imagination. You can't teleport yourself to a place that hasn't been.
I can, too. What about the moon people? They haven't been yet.
Oh, Star, they have, too. Not for your daddy, they haven't, but for the things from Arcturus. The moon people were about 10 million light years ago.
Now, wait a minute, kids. Hold on. Jim, have you been listening to this?
I think I heard it.
Now, look, kids. You're either playing a big joke on us older folks, or you've actually figured out a way to travel to places in the past. Right?
And in the future, too, Daddy.
Star, could you tell us how you do it?
It would be easier if I could ESP it to you.
Well, just pretend we're stupids and tell us in words.
Well, you remember the Mobius strip?
I remember. She made it about a year ago, Jim.
Well... You join the ends of a strip of paper with a half twist to make one surface. Then you take a sheet and give it a half twist so you can join the edges together all over.
That's Klein's bottle.
Oh, you know about that.
Yes, we know that. Go on.
Well, then you take a cube. You imagine a cube, and you twist it.
Tesseract? Shh. Go on, Star.
And you ESP the twisted cube all together the same way you did Klein's bottle. Now, if you do that big enough, all around you, so you're sort of folded into it, you can teleport yourself any place you want to go. And that's all there is to it.
Jim, what do you think?
I need another drink, Pete. A big one.
That's all there was to it. The line, the plane, the cube, those were Euclidean physics. The Möbius strip, the Klein bottle, the twisted cube, those were Einsteinian physics. Well, I was pretty advanced in both, but I'd have to do some heavy thinking to really grasp it. Meanwhile, the two little kids stood there staring at us.
Star, Robert, can you tell us some of the places you've been?
All over, Uncle Jim. The Romans and the Egyptians and places like that.
Is that how you got the coin?
I found it. It wasn't stealing, was it, Daddy? I just found it in the dirt.
We'll skip that for a minute. What about going to the future?
There isn't any future, Mr. Holmes.
What's that?
It's kind of hard to explain. Even Star doesn't get it.
Oh.
Well, when she gets to be six, like I am, she'll probably understand.
Well, try to explain it to me.
Well, it's all connected, just like the Möbius strip. If you go far enough, you'll get back to where it starts again. You start with the cavemen, then us men, then atomic men, the moon men, planet men, star men, and brights. Only somehow...
What?
The brights got off the strip. We haven't been able to find them any place in time.
I'd sure like to know how they got off and where they are.
Now, look, kids, this kind of thing can be dangerous. You might be eaten by a dinosaur or something.
Well, we'd just ESP ourselves right out of there.
Well, anyway, I don't want you leaving this part of the time strip. Not again.
Daddy.
Now, I may be just a tween, but I'm your father.
I always mind you, Daddy.
Yeah? What about going off the block?
But, Daddy, we didn't cross a single street.
Nevertheless...
Pete, think of what you're doing. Pictures, specimens, recordings. Not only from the past, but from the future. Pete, I beg you.
Jim, this is my daughter.
But what a contribution. We could be ages ahead of ourselves.
No. Star. Robert. I'd like your promise you won't leave present time again. Well?
Okay.
All right. Now run along. Robert's mother has some cookies and milk for you.
Okay. See you later, Daddy. Meet you there.
Last one's a moon man.
Jim, I'm sorry.
Well, I suppose if I had a daughter...
Are you going to report this?
And have everybody give me the horse laugh? I may be just a tween, Pete, but I'm not an utter fool.
It took me almost 6 months to do it. I don't know how many times I visualized a cube and ESP'd it a half twist and tried to seal the edges around me. And then once there was a flash, just for an instant, I was concentrating on Caesar's triumphant march into Rome. And for the briefest instant, there it was. I was standing on a roadway watching, and then it vanished.
Hey.
Hi, Daddy.
What are you two characters plotting?
Nothing, Daddy.
Well, I'm going to my study for a while. Star?
Yes, Daddy?
You remember your promise about not leaving present time, don't you?
Yes, Daddy.
You going to keep it?
Yes, Daddy.
Okay. I'm holding you to it. Hello?
Hello, Pete, this is Ruth Howell.
Yeah?
Are the kids there?
No.
When did you see them last?
What time is it? Oh, about 10 this morning, 6 or 7 hours ago. Why?
Oh, Pete, I'm worried.
What's up?
Well, they were upstairs in Bobby's room. I was in the living room. Now, I could swear they didn't come downstairs, and yet, when I went up there, they were gone. That was over 5 hours ago.
Ruth, are you sure they didn't come down?
In that living room every moment. Pete, I'm afraid.
Now, Ruth, don't get panicky. I'm coming right over. Just don't get panicky. There wasn't a trace of them. Well, that isn't exactly true. Remember what Robert had said about Star leaving an ESP smudge? Well, I was able to catch it in Robert's room. It had something to do with where the brights went when they got off the time strip. That's it, of course. They wouldn't disobey by leaving present time. But isn't it possible that there is more than one present time? Isn't it possible that another now coexists with ours? That's the clue, of course.
I'm going to call the police, Pete.
I don't think it'll do any good.
But we've got to find them. They'd have come back by now.
Yes, if they could.
What do you mean?
Nothing.
Well, what are you going to do?
I'm going back to my study to think.
To think? Aren't you going to look for them?
I have to figure out where to look.
Well, I'm not going to sit around doing nothing. I'm calling the police.
That was this morning. I've been doing some desperate concentrating since then, Jim. I'm writing this down so you'll know. I've already managed to go back to the time of Cheops and ahead to the time when men were navigating to distant planets in a matter of days. But the big job remains. How to get into a dimension parallel with our own at the same time. I figured out that to get the equivalent of a Mobius strip with depth, you must use the supercube, the tesseract. That's what I'm working on at the moment. If I succeed, there is a possibility. I may not be able to get back. I hope you will be able to make Bill and Ruth Howell understand. Okay, now if I take 6 cubes and fold them in one another so that every angle is a right angle. Yes, all right, I've got that. And now if in folding, I ESP the tesseract, a half twist around myself.
Mr. Holmes. Mr. Holmes, are you in there? Mr. Holmes? We'll have to break in. It's locked from the inside. Mr. Holmes!
Pete! Pete, where are you? Pete?
That's funny. The door was locked from the inside, but here's his fountain pen with the ink still wet. But he's gone.
You have just heard X-1, presented by the National Broadcasting Company in cooperation with Galaxy Science Fiction Magazine, which this month features the final installment of Frederick Pohl's novel, Slave Ship, story of a world engaged in the wildest of all possible non-wars, where the order of the day was even wilder still. Spare every animal and throw the men to the wolves. Galaxy Magazine, on your newsstand today. Tonight, by transcription, X-1 has brought you Star Bright, a story from the pages of Galaxy written by Mark Clifton and adapted for radio by George Lefferts. Featured in the cast were Sarah Fussell, Lawson Zerbe, Bill Quinn, Billy Harris, Ralph Bell, and Kate Wilkinson. Your announcer, Fred Collins. X-1 was directed by Daniel Sutter and is an NBC Radio Network production.
Stew's the stew for you. Do you do the stew that stews? Come find out at UBC Sprouts.
Located in the basement of the AMS Nest and on the penthouse of the GSS building. Open weekdays 9 to 4:30.
UBC Sprouts is your home for cheap,
tasty,
organic,
locally sourced,
vegan stew and baked goods.
If the search has been long and futile and brutal.
At Dunkin' Donuts, each and every
radio show
is brewed fresh and served fresh in the peak of its flavor. If you're a tough customer, only the taste of this
radio show
will do. So go ahead, let Dunkin' Donuts make your
radio experience
exquisite.
Indeed.
Dunkin' Donuts, serving sweet treats from the Pop Underground. Thursdays, noon to 1.
And you are tuned in to CITR 101.9 FM. My name is Brian McDonald, and that's about all the time we have tonight for Scald's Hull. Coming up in a moment, we're going to be having Canada Post Rock with John. So from all of us here in beautiful Vancouver, please have a safe and happy weekend.
The Crane Library is looking for student volunteers to record textbooks for those who cannot use print at the university. If you are a UBC student who is computer literate with an ability to read university material aloud and you have a willingness to learn new techniques, we ask for a 2-hour commitment once a week. For additional information and to set up an audition, call 604 822